Hey, closet busters and bold move makers. It is time once again for Life Uncloseted. So I want you to gather around because it is time once again to kick down those closet doors of your life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemens. I'm the bold move expert and that coming out guy who's going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on along with me and grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step into facing your fears, making your bold moves, and living life without apologies. Now let's get to the show. Hello, Life Uncloseted family, and oh my gosh, it is Pride season. We are in the middle of it all, and I am so excited to have you here. I know you got lots of thoughts about Pride. Maybe you're not thinking about it, I don't know, but most of us do. We think about, are we going to go to a Pride festival or not? For some of us, it brings up some trauma and some thoughts about, oh, when did I ever think I was going to get here? And deep breath, everyone. And sometimes it leads us to those thoughts about God and those little voices that said, you're going to hell and all this sort of stuff. Well, today I'm really feeling blessed to have someone who's become a part of my world in so many different ways over the past year or so. And she's an author who I am thrilled to say has a brand new book coming out in October. I realize it's June, but get ready for it. Put it on your radar. It is called You Lied to Me About God, a memoir. And it's about exactly what we just were kind of looking at. Like, as a queer individual, what is all the lies we've been told about God and where we fit in? Bringing her strength, her resilience, her story, and some clarity, hopefully, to any of you who are struggling with it. I'm so excited to have my friend Jamie Marich here, PhD. Let's not forget she's a PhD. She got a doctorate. But I'm excited you're here, Jamie. It's been a while. Good to see
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. I'm so glad for the invitation. And yeah, I have a PhD in life is what I like to say at this point. Mm-hmm. I technically have the titles, but as you know, the coming out journey and navigating everything around that, I think so many of us qualify for a life PhD at this point. So
I agree 100%. And there's so many people that are probably, this could be their first Pride, you know, or maybe they're still afraid to go to Pride because somebody said you go there and you're going to go to hell, right?
Well, yes.
I mean, I haven't been to a Pride festival in a while, but I always remember when I used to march in the parades, there was always the God fearing folks standing there telling us we were all going to go to hell. But I don't know that there's
pictures. Yes.
Yes. And I don't know that there's very many of us that came through our coming out journeys without this piece of the story being part of it. So obviously it was part of your story, correct?
Big part of my story. So I identify as queer, technically bisexual, which is the identifier that I would use.
Oh, come on. Pick a lane, girlfriend. Pick a lane.
I know, right? If I was being more specific, but I've really come to embrace the word queer as a mark of pride in a lot of my work and growth. And yeah, I knew, like I really knew from when I was about 9, 10 years old that I liked both girls and boys. It just was very second nature for me. And I grew up in a doubly religious environment. And what I mean by that is my mother was a very devout Catholic, and my father left the Catholic Church when I was about 5 and became an evangelical, like the kind who would pick at a pride parade, and those kind of signs and those kind of threats. And so needless to say, I was bombarded with a lot of messages about being gay. Being anything really different aside from the church script was an abomination. I think so many of us have heard that and internalized that, like, I'm an abomination. I'm going to hell. I'm defective. So I grew up with a lot of that. Yet for me, how that really played out in my life is I just didn't even entertain going there for so many years. I mean, I will say the first people I kissed and did things with were girls, but it was kind of written off as, oh, you know, you're just experimenting, you're practicing for the boys. And then when any feeling came up around that, it's like, nope, you're just not allowed to go there. Do not go there because you will lose your family and you'll go to hell. So when I fortunately ended up in it was destructive in a lot of ways because I ended up drinking a lot when I was in college, but of course I did because I was trying to reconcile who I was with who my family, my very religious family, wanted me to be. But living outside of their home for the first time when I was an undergraduate in college is when I first came out to myself. And I think that coming out to ourselves is an important part of this process when you can finally admit, like, this is who I am, this is who I love, this is who I'm attracted to. And that was about 19 when I did that. Yet it was also followed by, oh shit, and this means I will lose everything I've ever known if I ever really do anything with this. So it took me a few years of therapy and counseling before I started dipping my toes out of the water and or into the water and really being honest about who I am and who I love and how I love. And then it's just been a progressive further coming out since I really stopped going to church in earnest when I was about 25. And we could talk about that if you're so inclined.
Well, I think it's interesting to like see our progressions and stuff, right?
Right.
So, right, you know, when I was in college was probably the first time I started embracing my queer self. Like, okay, this is who I am.
Yep.
Mid 80s. So it was a kind of a scary time to be doing that with the AIDS epidemic and everything. Right. And I came out, but I went back in. But simultaneously, when I was coming out, I went to a Seventh-day Adventist college in Tennessee. So I had my own, like, you know, burn in hell sort of thing going on. But I never bought into it. And that was also the first time that I started exploring other churches.
Okay.
Trying to go, is this really spot on? And, you know, it's interesting, Jamie, because I would say at that time, not only did I come out about being gay, but I came out about not being a faith believing Christian in the way I'd been raised. I was really like putting it out there.
That's a big coming out as well.
And my parents weren't, they didn't know it. I was doing it more behind the scenes with myself. But I would say those first 2 years there, and then I left and went to, you know, public college in Oklahoma after that. I probably explored 15, 20 other different churches. And even though I was in the Bible Belt in Tennessee, so most of them were very similar, but there was a lot of exploring, right? That was probably I know that was the first time I even looked at Buddhism. I'm like, what is this thing? You know, what is this stuff? Right. So ironically, roll forward, went back in the closet.
Yep.
Got married, had my kids.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. And then when I came back out at 36, there was this calling to explore connection to something higher than myself.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Cause I think coming back in the closet in some way is part of a lot of our stories, because as I reflect on, I came out to myself at 19. I essentially had my great liberal awakening when I was an undergrad. And then what took me back in the closet for a while is I started going back to church, albeit my mother's more Catholic side of my faith, which definitely felt like the softer of the two. I know a lot of people that surprises them, like the Catholic Church was the soft. Oh, yes. Compared to some of the evangelical hardness I was raised with. And what happened was I started going to Catholic Church again and working for the Catholic Church when I finished my undergrad because my drinking was so bad. And my mental health struggles were so bad. And I really chalked a lot of that up to, see, I fell away from God. So I need to connect back with God in some way. And the only template I really had for that at that point was to be super religious, because that's all that was really modeled for me. And so I did walk a pretty conservative Catholic path for a few years. I actually have a master's degree from a very Catholic institution. I write about it pretty extensively in the book. And it was the type of place where horrible things were said about gay people. The part of the Catholic Church I worked for when I was living in Europe in my early 20s. Also, you would hear horrible things, just lots of misinformation about gay people, queer people. And I do remember, Rick, that even though I would say I fell more back into the like pro-life side of things and feeling like I had to do that to be a good Christian. But what I heard about attacking gay people, trans people, just never quite sat right with me, even when I was back in the closet. And I remember a couple moments. Once, when I was at this, when I was working for the church in Europe, and I was sitting around just some people I invited over my house, which included some priests, and they were going on and on about, you know, the abomination of homosexuality and this, that, and the other. And it was this like clear as a bell moment. I just said to them, have you ever actually met a gay person for you to have an opinion? like this. And it was crickets. And in my experience, I've come to learn in a lot of those types of spaces where those types of conversations are had, you probably have some closeted people having these attack the gaze types of conversations. And at that point, I didn't out myself, but I did feel very comfortable saying some of my best friends are gay, which is very true, that some of my best friends I made during college are gay people, lesbian people, bisexual people. And so I would advocate from the perspective of my friends, but knowing that a lot of this applied to myself. And when I was in this ultra conservative Catholic graduate program, same thing. Questions would be brought up about, we'd read a case study from a secular counseling textbook, and the professor would ask a question like, do you think this person's really gay? Or is it a response to trauma or abuse? And I would sit there just like, I don't like this conversation that they're having and that they're facilitating. And it was really after, very shortly after I finished my graduate program, that I had my kind of second major, because my first major deconstruction was coming out of the evangelical church, which was very needed. And then I needed like a second deconstruction to come out of pretty rigid Catholicism. And a lot of what prompted that was, come on, Jamie, you know who you are. You know, not just who you love, but how you love. And you're faking it again, and you're not going to stay well long term from your addiction and your mental health struggles if you continue to fake it.
And I think it's so interesting when we realize that faking it is not making it whatsoever. It just
Correct.
isn't. And
Correct.
that's where, I mean, yes, there was, people who've read my book and listened to the podcast, there was the extenuating circumstance of the guy that quote brought me out of the closet. But it was because my soul, my essence, everything finally was saying, you can't fake this anymore. You're cheating, you're having sex with guys on the side, you're fantasizing about men, you think about what it'd be like to live with a guy. You're already more than a foot in the doorway, right? There's just this impending thing. However, what I will say is everything I just said isn't everything that made me gay. What made me gay was I wasn't happy. What made me gay was I didn't like being dishonest. What made me gay was I was a human wanting to experience something that innately was in my human DNA. And even though those things may not sound like they made me gay, they're part of me being a gay man because they're part of me being a human. The difference is I'm a human who happens to be gay, just like you're a human who happens to be bi. It's that simple. And if people could embrace this, which I know that'd be a whole show we could go on and on for hours, why people won't embrace that concept, we see it play out daily in our world right now. It always comes back to almost the simplest question, which always gets under their skin. Well, how did you know you were straight? How did you know you were heterosexual?
Great question.
Well, I just do. Well, guess what? I just do too. I just do. That's how I know. There's not, and of course, those who know I've had the sexual trauma, they're like, well, that's what caused it. I'm like, nope. It isn't what caused it. It should never happened. I will say that 100% of the way. And it was, again, people who've listened to it, but I think this is really important to bring this up during Pride season. For those who've not heard it, when that happened to me as a young man, seven, six, seven, 8 years old, when that was happening, it should have never happened. But it wasn't until one night I was speaking at a college that I even brought it up. And I don't know, it was divine intervention. That's where I'll say divine intervention said, it's time to talk about this. And I actually said these words, Jamie, it should never have happened. But I knew in the moment that it happened, so much made sense to me. So much made sense to me because I was looking at him. I was looking at his genitals. I was looking at his masculinity as a man. And I'm like, oh, this makes sense. Because what was happening in my six, seven, 8 year-old body at that time wasn't just, oh, I'm being sexually abused. That was if anything, that was the piece that I wasn't getting, right? Until after I figured that out, like that shouldn't have been happening to me. But man,
And
ooh, I understand this stuff now.
I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate your candidness about that. And even as you're sharing, my reflection coming up is, and people who are gay, bi, or queer, trans, etc., who have also experienced sexual trauma deserve to have care, whether that be clinical care, whether that be pastoral care, with somebody who's not going to put these misinformed judgments on them. Like, oh, that happened because you were, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Two things can be true at the same time. You know, I like where we're going here, that you are who you are just because that your sexuality, your gender identity is not as the result of abuse. Yet if you've experienced abuse, you have every right to unpack that and share. Right.
And I did. There was other things that abuse made me understand so much about my quote daddy issues, right? It made me understand so much about my stubbornness and not wanting to admit things, right? I didn't talk about it because, well, I probably did not talk about it because guess what? I would say, well, don't say anything to anybody. Say anything to anybody. Because that was the familial line when it happened. They did take, quote, took care of it. But even the person who did it came up to me many, many years later, all like, I'm so sorry and everything. I'm like, hey, you already apologized once. Like, and this was after I was an adult. So this was, you know, I had already gotten married and everything. And they called me and, you know, I'm so glad to see you, you know, going down this path. And I was already like in my own head at that point, like, none of you really know what's going on here, but I'm going to play the game. I'm going to play the game. Right. And then when he came up to me after many years at my grandfather's funeral and started to go, I said, you know what? I'm resolved. You need to go resolve this on your own. And he didn't know what to do with that. Yeah. And I've never interacted with him since, not because I hold any grudge or anything. It's just like, I don't need that in my world. I've come to terms with it. You need to go figure that out. And I know the familial lineage of how this all works in that side of my family. They're going to hold on to that. Like, I've got to get Rick to tell me I'm accepted. I already did that, but I didn't do it in the way that you wanted me to. That's on you. That's not on me. Mm-hmm. And I think this whole thing about how we get given these God words and everything in our journey as queer individuals, I think many of us can move through this, provided we embrace. And I think you and I kind of fall in the same space. I never said I don't believe.
Right.
I never said I don't have to be in a church. Mm-hmm. I don't go to a church these days, but I still have a higher power belief that I'm not just here.
Yeah.
Now, how I choose to believe, that's on my terms. I don't need the pew and a door. And for those who want that, great. That's your way of getting it done. I don't need that.
So I share this in the memoir because it's a big, honest part of my story. I actually never stop believing in God. And I go as far as to say, I'm cool with Jesus. I don't like what so many Jesus's followers have done to him. A lot of mainstream theologies just don't resonate with the God and even the Jesus I've experienced when I've been at the depths of my suffering. And a lot of that has come, that suffering, because I've tried to come to terms with what other people believe about me. And I also share, though, in my work, if God is not it for you right now, if you don't, like, there's no compulsion, there's no rules here. For some people, leaving any kind of faith or church or spiritual practice or God, if that is what you feel you need to do to recover and heal, I honor that. I respect that. I will say, speaking purely for myself and for many, just what I've observed in many people I work with, though, that one of the reasons spiritual trauma can hurt us so much is because everything in people like me wants spiritual connection, wants connection to something divine, or to be able to connect divine human to, divinely in a human to human way. And so I don't think throwing God and even spiritual practice out ever would have worked for me, because I, like, again, for me, God's not the problem. And that's one of the reasons I've titled the memoir, You Lied to Me About God, because the problem was so many of the lies I was told about God and about Jesus and about myself through these very dogmatic religions.
Well, you know, in the description of the book, you talk about when faith becomes weaponized, you know, and then suddenly when this push and pull starts to happen, and you're told no matter what, you know, no matter what path you choose, no matter what you know in your heart to be true, you're damned. You're just damned. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and that was a big thing for me, Jamie. That was huge. Like, it was it was disillusionment at 19, how much mm-hmm. that was damaging to me, because I was petrified. I was, yeah. I really was so bought into the damnation piece. And then add on to that, that when I came out, the AIDS epidemic had just started. So yeah. there was that whole scary thing. We don't know what's happening. And well, what is this? I was sexually naive. I'd never even had any, not even, I've never even had Bill Clinton sex. Okay. Let's just go there. I hadn't touched a penis. I hadn't done a blowjob. I hadn't even touched a girl. I mean, I kissed a girl and maybe some fondling yeah. of, you know, the tatas. That was about it. But sex wise, no. I go, some of that would go, well, if you touched a tata, you've had sex. I'm like, okay, let's not even go.
Yeah.
Let's not even go there, folks. Okay. But I was so petrified that none of this could make sense.
Mm.
But then at 36, when this came out, I felt the whole different piece of, really? I'm not sure how I can be damned when a lot of you that are saying that to me are divorced.
Yes.
You're wearing jewelry. You're doing this. So this is where suddenly we pick and choose, right? And a whole lot of that's going on these days for damn sure. Like, oh, no, they can't be this. But man, some of the people who are crying the loudest, like, damn, the queers to hell, are the ones that are like, really? You've been through three marriages and you've been... It's like you get to pick and choose. That doesn't fly with me. But it's such an interesting space to, when you realize, wait, I can have a relationship with God and believe in Jesus, and there's nothing wrong with me being queer and being that.
Right.
Nothing. Huge relief.
And for people who are listening to this, who are struggling with, oh, but my church said, my deacon said, my daddy said, you know, or whatever. If you grew up Christian or evangelical, you know, I promise you there are other scholars and theologians who can teach you how scripture has been misinterpreted and mistranslated. And really so much of what theology is the interpretation of scripture. And who's doing the interpreting? Humans who have their biases and their hatreds and their jealousies. And one thing I could tell you from my work clinically is it is human nature for any of us, and I could do this as a liberal person, to want to take a more moral high ground, or what I perceive as a more moral high ground, to like lord over other people so that I feel better about myself. And so many of the people who are doing theology in a mainstream sense, it's just doing the work of interpretation through your existing biases and worldviews.
Well, that's what it is, though, is those existing biases mm-hmm. in so many ways. What is one of the things you feel like you've really learned for yourself, not only in the journey, but now, you know, you've now written this book. Mm-hmm. Were there moments where it's like, oh yeah, I'm relearning this again. Oh, it feels really good. It kind of, well, it could be scary, or it could feel really good to like, ooh, I'm actually putting this into print and I'm revisiting this piece and it helped me. Like, is there something that kind of showed up as you were going through this again? So
what a great question. What a great question. Because I think all trauma therapy, all trauma healing is about relearning, that we learn such horrible things about ourselves early on. And in various ways, we have to unlearn and relearn. And for many of us, that happens through therapy. For many, it happens through life experience when we see that things could be another way. And when I went to write this book, and I share this in the introduction, on one hand, it was the hardest thing I had to do, but the easiest thing I had to do. Because all of this material are things I have gone through and through in therapy over the years and in my expressive practice and in other spiritual practices that it just flowed out of me, this particular book. There was so much that I just had to say very honestly and very candidly. I think probably what surprised me the most, kind of going to your question, is how much I really do love God. Because yeah, like I said, I never lost that belief or lost that connection. But I'm thinking of a friend of mine who's a Catholic nun that's now an out lesbian woman or queer woman. I don't know exactly how she identifies right now. But I remember a conversation we had where we said, is it quite possible that we love God more now that we're being authentic? And we mm-hmm. both shook our heads in agreement that it really tracked. And as I finished up the book, yeah, I told a lot of stories about very painful things that happened to me and a lot of painful realizations and dark nights of the soul. Yet I was really filled with this sense of, I'm grateful that I've been shown a way to do spirituality in a healthier way. And that's really how the book ends, is here's where my spirituality is today.
And one of the features of the book I really like is I invite my readers at the end of each chapter, because the book is written thematically. It's not like, here, I start at age zero and then go all the way up. But every chapter takes on a different theme, like the role of family roots, family lineage, like you've mentioned. Another theme is about moral development. One is about sex. One chapter is about family and relational scripts. And so with every theme, I invite readers to explore some of their own relationship with these types of themes. And I encourage people that you may never publish your spiritual memoir or spiritual autobiography, but for yourself, I encourage you to get it down, either on paper, in art, if other forms of art or expression are better fits for you. Because I do think this process of unlearning and relearning is something that can serve all of our healing.
But I think that's the key, is how does this serve all of our healing? One of the most healing moments I've had in many, many, many years happened just recently, like literally in the last week. My parents obviously struggled when I came out at 19. They were a predominant reason I went back in the closet. I had my moment with the pastor at church, and I always say on stage, it was great, mom and dad, send me to the pastor, but it didn't work because he was really, really hot. So there we go. That was the
Love
truth.
that.
Okay.
Love that.
So and he was just, there are certain guys I still see from time to time in the community. I'm like, yep, there's the pastor right there. They got the same build and everything, right? Then when I did come out at 36, it was even more tumultuous because now there was children and my ex-wife involved, and there's been just struggle throughout the years. And in the last couple of years, I've finally relinquished so much to, like, they are where they are. This is, I can't change them. I can only be present and embrace how I choose to be with them in the relationship. And when I don't choose to be in it that way, then I easily just, eject myself from the situation. My parents, dad just is 81, mom is 78. So they're up there, but not like they're getting there. And just this week, my dad has been really having some struggles. He's an anxiety worry ward about the end of times and all this stuff. He's going to go to his grave worrying about it. I'm like, when you're gone, dad, you're not going to know what really happens. You're not ever going to know the end of the story. So, why are you doing this? I've been having these, trying to have little conversations about his anxiety. Like, dad, just, you can't change anything what's happening. All you can do is be yourself and be your way in this, right? Had those conversations. And finally, 2 days ago, I said, well, dad, I think, because he went to the ER just like literally 2 days ago, he was in the ER. I said, dad, I'm not going to say this again. I'm just going to encourage you to, like, really trust that if you could just let a little bit of your anxiety go, things are getting a lot better. You're going to feel better. You're going to sleep better, all this sort of stuff. And he goes, I never have really thought about how much you're really good at what you must do for people and all the good you do in the world. I thought I was going to drive my car off the edge of the road right then and there, because he's been such an adamant, you're breaking up families, and he kind of got away from that a few years ago, but there's always been this edge, and those are those moments that I feel like bring you to that space where you finally can be at peace. And that peace wouldn't have come to me, quite honestly, Jamie, if I wasn't at peace within myself and going, I believe in God the way I choose to. And I said it to my parents all the time. I'm like, well, you'll never see me in a church. You'll never see me sitting in a church probably again. Of course, then we just came back from being in Barcelona and going to Sagrada Familia, one of the most moving
What you do in
spiritual,
Barcelona, yes.
right? And I walked out of there shaking. Like, I was so moved by just the essence of that experience. But that doesn't mean I sat down and, went to church, but just those are the moments when you realize there's something bigger than yourself. There's, let alone that church is bigger than most of us. But anyway, I think these are the moments that through your work and the kind of way we talk about this stuff to encourage those who, again, some of you are getting ready to head out to Pride. And in the back of your mind, especially if it's your first one, you're like, I'm going to go to hell for doing this. No, you're not.
You're
You're
not.
not. Actually, if anything, you're probably going to heaven for being more authentically who you are and not hiding your truth and not lying about who you are in the world and what you're meant to be. To me, those are those moments. Those are the
Agreed.
beautiful moments.
And health theology is another weapon in this war chest of abusive religion and spirituality that people hurl at us. He just wants you to remember, and if this means anything to you, most of the hell anxiety does come from those of us who grew up Christian in one of Christian denominations. And just remember that there's a whole wide world of people out there who believe various and different things spiritually, and hell theology is not in everybody's belief system. Mm-mm. And it's also a thread of Christian theology that is completely open to interpretation. And I do reflect quite a bit on hell in my book, because that, especially on the evangelical side of things, was a huge threat that was held over us. I write about having to sit through this horrible play when I was a child called Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames, where they literally put on these scenarios of how people died. And they showed this angel at the Book of Life who would judge people and send them to heaven or hell. And I look back on it now with this sense of how arrogant these folks are who raised me in the church, to think that they can cast those judgments on people. 'Cause that's really what this is about. It has nothing to do with God.
But it's so interesting because, and I don't think either one of us are saying we're perfect. I'm not advocating that whatsoever. I am as imperfect human as they are.
Same here.
I always find it really interesting that those who cast those stones the hardest are the ones who are actually, some piece of their world is actually breaking the rules as much as they want to say that we're breaking the rules. And it's just, it's devastating to me that it's the inconsistency and the hypocrisy that drove me away from the church. It isn't God. God didn't drive me away. It's the hypocrisy. And to this day, I cannot, and I try really, really hard, because I was raised in a narcissistic household. So talk about breaking, like really having to break free from stuff. That's a tough one to break free from, because there's DNA in my system still from day to day that I have to like, whoa, slow down, big boy. You're acting just like what you were, you know, socialized to be, right? But when that hypocrisy shows up, it is one of the things that I most have to like try not to be a jerk about, but go step away from it. Step away. And when I can't see someone who's being so hypocritical, not able to see it, I even have to try harder to go, this is being shown to you, Rick, because you need to learn this lesson again. To keep that hypocrisy out of your own way of being. In fact, one of the things that you say is that, you know, the being in the shrines in Croatia and then moving through the ashrams of Florida, how the reckoning brought you home to heal and accept yourself wholly. I'm so glad I went through some of that. I mean, I remember being in Hong Kong and being at a temple and having a really unique experience with a Buddhist priest at that moment. It sticks with me to this day. And there are moments like when I'm at my worst, Jamie, I put myself right back in that temple with him. And it was an eerie experience, because I don't know where he came from and I don't know where he went after we had the conversation, because he just kind of came in and was gone. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, I don't get it. That same trip, I was standing on a corner right after that whole experience in the temple. It was the next day. And this guy in this turban standing next to me. And, you know, I'm just walking to go to the office and work. And he literally turns to me and say, your suffering and pain will soon end. And then he walked away. I was like, what the hell? What the hell? But guess what? At that time, I wasn't in a church. I wasn't in a pew. Guess where my church was? It was everywhere I was being. And those are those moments. And again, I'm not knocking anybody who, you know, there are times, I mean, you go put me in a good old Black Southern gospel church, I'll be there in a heartbeat. Because I want to feel that, right? I'll never knock somebody who wants to be there.
Right.
But I also want you to realize you can have, and I think this is the whole, a lot of the point of our conversation today, is you can have the relationship with God and realize everything you've been told is a lie. Everything.
That's incredibly well expressed. And, you know, one of our many points of alignment. And As we're speaking, I have this very strong memory coming up of Because I've had a lot of priests, especially Catholic priests, who've had positive influence on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who have are usually of the variety who can typically roll their eyes when they see a lot of the hypocrisy going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, I know that they get it on some level, even if they have to kind of teach some kind of party line to,
yep,
you know, keep the job. But I just vividly remember when I was working in Europe, and this one priest who I talked to, who was, you know, a delightful Irishman, and I was struggling with this, trying to reconcile the different truths that were out there, or the things that were being promoted as different truths. And I mean, I really struggled with, in those years that I lived in the dormitory away from my parents and undergrad, I met people of other faiths who, to me, like how can they be going to hell? Because so much of the brand of, especially the evangelical side I was raised with, yep, was if you do not specifically believe in Jesus in this specific way, you know, you are going to hell.
Yep.
And this priest said to me just very candidly, he goes, Jamie, it's one thing to profess your faith in Jesus with your words and with a creed, and it's another thing to show it with your life and with how you live. And that's when I really started to see, wow, that interpretation does play such a big role in this. And I've never been one who buys the words that I want to see, you know, how you do Jesus. And part of that means being incredibly imperfect and embracing and admitting your imperfection as we do. Something one of my first recovery sponsors used to tell me was she thought that the 12 apostles were literally the first AA meeting because Jesus picked like the most kind of ragamuffin people around who had a lot of issues. And I also reflect in the book that it's the imperfect people, the people who swear, the people who can own their imperfectness, imperfection, and the roughness around the edges that I tend to see as the most holy, or those who inspire me with their holiness.
We were in Portugal just not even a whole month ago.
Yeah.
And we were in Porto, and our tour guide was walking us through Porto and all this beautiful stuff. And one of the things that she kept saying that I thought was very interesting, given how here, especially in the US, I feel like Christianity has become very weaponized.
Right.
Everybody said, oh, well, you know, I'm a Christian. And that's one of those things that gets under my nerves really bad. Like, you know, I'm a Christian. She said something that I thought, oh my gosh, that actually made me feel really warm and fuzzy. She goes, well, you know, because Porto has, I don't know, it has some ungodly amount of, you know, cathedrals. It's just crazy how many cathedrals are in that small little river city. She goes, well, you know, we in Portugal were believers. And well, you know, we're believers. Not once did she say we're Christian, but right. I didn't have to think twice about it. I thought, how beautiful to just say we're believers. We believe in a God. We believe in something greater than ourselves. And it didn't rub me the wrong way. Now, I'm going to own my own stuff. That rubbing me the wrong way is my thing. But when I heard somebody who was like, you know, and then afterwards I thought, well, she's probably trying to say it in a way that doesn't offend anybody. But I don't know that she was, because it was just so beautiful the way she goes, well, you know, as believers, we, you know, da, da, da. And it was almost like a joke, like, well, you know, we have so many churches because, you know, if we want to believe one, you know, one thing this week, we'll go to this one. And if we want to believe this one, and she goes, but they all teach the same thing. So we're just believers. I thought, what a beautiful way to just embrace the truth of what you're saying. I believe, and I always say this, I believe in something greater than myself. That's all I say. I don't say any other things.
I've taken to saying I'm a person of faith.
Yep.
Because, yeah, you are exactly right in my view that I am a Christian has become a label that is, and to identifying in that way, that is associated with so much hatred and discrimination, especially.
And I hate that, because there are really beautiful Christians that are taking the bad rap for the rest of it.
And I'm a person of faith who still keeps one foot in Christianity or one foot in Catholicism. I'm a person of faith. Somebody said once, I'm in an open relationship with Jesus. And I really liked that, that resonated.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah. Another queer friend of mine will say, I follow the teachings of Jesus Christ as her identifier. So Yeah, I'm thank you for sharing that story with me. That was quite beautiful. We're believers.
Well, and I love, I'm definitely writing down the open relationship with Jesus. That's a good one.
I can't take credit for that.
But you know what? It's so beautiful because it can be, I'm open to the relationship with him in so many ways on however you choose to interpret it. I'm not going to interpret it like the crazy off the cuff. But if I choose to believe in, you know, him in one way and you believe in him in another way, but it still raises us both up, high five. Yep. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people say that and they don't believe one word they're saying. It's just a way to make me better than you.
Agreed.
Plain and simple.
Agreed.
And that doesn't work for me. My grandfather was one of those people. I still maintain it. My mom's dad, old farmer from Colorado, lived on the farm, I don't know, 40, 50 some odd years. He did not come into the Seventh-day Adventist faith. He was not part of the Seventh-day Adventist faith until he met my grandmother. And he fully supported that faith. But the one thing he never did was judge anybody else. Never once. The way he lived told me he was a man of faith. The way he acted told me he was a man who gave compassionately to others. Everything he did made me believe 100% if he's not going to make it through the door to heaven, I sure the hell don't have a chance. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of guy I want to look at and go, you know what? This is the person I want to mimic the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's important. So, well, Jamie, I'm so excited for your book. I'm so excited that you came and shared. I'm so excited that some of these people are listening and going to Pride, and maybe they're going to go with a new, you know, spring in their step about, okay, I can be a person of faith. I can be a follower. I can be a Jesus believer and still love and own myself. So
thank you. Cause we are out there, and it is time that we have been finding each other and connecting with each other. And if this chat helped you to feel that even further today, I'm glad, and happy Pride. Enjoy it. Whatever it brings up for you feeling wise, it's valid. And thank you, Rick, for having me on for the conversation.
Oh, of course. It's always good to see you. And I hope everybody, when you're ready, give them the name of your book, because it's going to be coming out in October. So let's get it out there so they can pre-order when it's time.
The book, yeah, and it is open for pre-order wherever books are sold right now. It's called You Lied to Me About God, a memoir.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jamie, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much again for being here. And happy Pride, everybody. Go out and enjoy Pride. However that works for you. There's no one way to do Pride. There's many ways to do Pride, just like there's many ways to be a human and be a sexual person and be a gender person in all the different ways that are out there. So happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Hey, 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 Life Uncloseted family. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, and it is time for all of us to sashay away and go face our fears, make those bold moves, and stand up to living our life without apology. But before you do, I've got a favor to ask of you. Would you hop over to iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or wherever it is that you're listening to this, and just give us a little bit of love if you like what we're doing here at Life Uncloseted. Here's what it does. It helps other people find the show. It helps other people get to know what we're all about. And you just might help change life. In fact, if you really want to change a life, we'd love it if you just ask a friend to take a listen and see what they think. So that's it. Love you all deeply. I'm Rick Clemons, the host of Life Uncloseted. And never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your life uncloseted.